tells us that whoever wishes to be great among you shall be the least, and whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your servant. Jesus' teaching runs counter to the manner in which we prefer to act or behave. We want to be first. If you watch college football on the weekend, see all of the "we are number one" spongy figures or signs. Folks running for public office know that it is a sound electoral strategy to claim or to urge us to be number one in everything. Think about the campaign slogans. Ronald Reagan told us, quote, "Let's make America great again." And President Kennedy ran with the slogan, "A time for greatness." I recall a famous bumper sticker in the 1992 election, which simply stated, "Bill Clinton, a cure for the blues." Never underestimate the power of presidential candidates to cure clinical depression. And we could even cite a recent election or two. There is nothing objectively wrong with doing our best, using our God-given talents and gifts in service to building up the kingdom here on this earth. The failure, I think, lies in the failure to recognize and act upon those instances in which number one is a big problem. As in the reality that among the top 20 industrialized nations in our world, the U.S. is number one in death by firearms. We're number one in carbon dioxide initiatives. We lead the world in injuries and death from road accidents. Sometimes being number one is not such a grand idea. In today's gospel, James and John wanted to be number one in the kingdom, or at least to sit on Jesus' right and left hands in the kingdom. And lest we think that those two were especially troublesome disciples, it is more than likely that the other 10 disciples who were quote-unquote indignant, they wanted the same thing. Jesus' message was different. He defined number one as being a servant. He uses the word slave, which is the lowest social category imaginable in first century Palestine. Each of us are called to serve, to be number one in serving others, in building up the kingdom, and to be number one in being faithful to Christ's teaching. Sometimes the work and the obligation that is associated with it, that work can seem overwhelming if it were not for God's love and his mercy and salvation, which he extends to all of us. Working to protect the dignity of the human person from conception to natural death is foundational in our work. Our belief in the sacredness of human life is the center around which all of the principles with which our social teaching are organized. And this obligation to protect the dignity of human persons extends to all stages of life, yes, from the beginning, but also to those in the shadows of life, the lonely and the addicted, the forgotten, and sometimes even the differently abled. This continuum includes treating our seniors with respect and supporting those requiring healthcare services and working to ensure that folks are able to retire in dignity. Reaching out to lift up the poor and the needy is an essential part of being a servant. Yes, of course that means giving of our treasure, but it also means investing of our time and talent in worthwhile ministries and causes. Servanthood does not mean that we shy away from the uncomfortable realities or conditions or structures in our world, those that foster poverty and racism and sexism. Most importantly, being a servant calls us to love. Yes, yes, our family and our friends, those who care and for about us, but also loving those who irritate us, who offend us in some way, maybe even those who may dislike us. This is not an easy time to be a Christian, and here I'm just not referring to the revelations of abuse and harassment. I would extend this difficulty to our lives in the workplace and in our neighborhoods and in the public square. As we know, the political campaign ad season is upon us, and already it's pretty negative. In fact, if we believed in all of the campaign ads which will flood our media over the coming weeks, that was all true, all of our public officials and wannabes deserve a good spanking from their mamas, and perhaps a bar of soap to clean their mouths out wouldn't be a bad idea either. Later this year, we will enter the joyous season of Christmas. By all means, greet one another with a Merry Christmas. And if you get a look or two, that's okay. I really think that we can handle it. The point is simple. We are asked to be number one in proclaiming the good news. The good news that God loved us so much that he sent his son, his only son, to die for our salvation. The good news that the two greatest commandments are loving God and loving our neighbor. The good news that our Lord's love for us, the love that transforms us into servants, is far, far more important than being number one.